Hello, this is Tamara, reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, December 3rd. Let's begin on the front page with the Children's Museum of Illinois in Decatur, slipping, sliding, spinning around. We have a very cute photo of Abby Jordan playing with Elise, 2, and Audrey, 7, on the Sock Skating Rink at the Children's Museum of Illinois in Decatur on Monday, November 24th. From Donette Becker in Decatur. In a stocking feat, that's F-E-A-T, museum helps kids skate inside. Mount Zion residents Emma Falk and her daughters, 3-year-old Alex and 5-year-old Amelia, visited the Children's Museum of Illinois, ready to kick off their shoes and have a good time. The museum staff is encouraging families to do the same and test out the new Sock skating rink. "We were slipping and sliding and spinning around," Falk said. "A lot of parents are out there, too." The museum already has events scheduled featuring the Sock skating rink, including a slip and slide day with other wintertime activities, scheduled on December 13th. They also have an adult version set for December 18th. Registration for both events is available through the museum's website. Sock skating has proven to be a fun pastime for any age or any kind of weather condition. According to their mother, the Falk children have enjoyed their time on the rink so far. "We skate a lot," Amelia said. "And we play Ring Around the Rosie," Emma added. The new feature is taking up a corner of the mess hall on the second floor of the museum. "This might be a way to get back into it or just get a little feel for it," said Melanie Bilbrey Snively, Director of Education and Outreach for the museum. "The material of the socks isn't important," the staff said. "But if they have the grippy material on them, they probably won't go as far," Bilbrey Snively said. "For those who forget their socks, the museum will provide a pair. The white and shiny removable floor made of a synthetic ice called gleis has similar characteristics of an actual ice rink, except it isn't cold. It's more slippery than you think, but you have enough traction that you're not falling," Bilbrey Snively said. Holiday decor around the rink adds to the ambiance. However, the mess hall's vending machines will provide refreshments, and you can find a bench to have a little snack, Bilbrey Snively said. "But just like a real ice skating rink, the fun is temporary. The floor will be removed at the end of December. We're hoping to do it each winter," Bilbrey Snively said. From Tony Reed, City Shifts Housing Money. Council backs effort to keep Garfield School Homes project alive. The Decatur City Council voted to keep the dream alive of saving another imposing former Decatur school building from the wrecking ball and instead see it turned into affordable housing for seniors. The project is the redevelopment of the 100-year-old castle-like mass of red bricks that was the Garfield School and later Durfee Magnet School at 1077 West Grand Avenue. The city's Economic and Community Development Director, Lacey Elsie, said work on the housing units is due to begin in December, with ground broken by the end of the month. The council had previously voted to kick in $675,000 to help get the housing development rolling. Some $375,000 of that cash would be pulled from Federal American Rescue Plan, ARPA, dollars, previously made available to the city, with another $300,000 coming from the Home Investment Partnerships Program, which provides yet more federal tax dollars to the city to stimulate the building of affordable housing. But interim city manager Melissa Hahn told council members the best laid plans hit a snag. The council voted back in 2023 to spend the federal monies on the future school project, but in the time since, all the city's ARPA funds had already been allocated to other projects. Her solution, which the council approved by a 7-0 vote at its Monday night meeting, was to meet the city's full $675,000 commitment out of available home funds instead. And based on Hahn's recommendation, the council also voted unanimously Monday to sell the 211,000 square foot school site to the project's developers for the token sum of $100. The full cost of the housing project itself, supported by federal tax dollars, runs to more than $20 million. Hahn said the city's relatively tiny contribution from its allocation of federal cash represented a sound investment. The former Garfield School, constructed in 1925, remains a key historic asset and redevelopment priority for both the city and surrounding neighborhood, she said at the meeting. Through extensive stakeholder discussions and collaboration with the Illinois Housing Development Authority, a clear redevelopment vision emerged, one that preserves the school's architectural character while delivering much-needed senior housing. Market analysis continues to confirm strong demand for quality senior housing at 50%, 60%, and 80% AMI, area's medium income, reinforcing the project's alignment with community needs. That redevelopment vision is being spearheaded by Bywater Development, a St. Louis-based affordable housing developer. Elsie said the builders had a fast timeline for the project. Pre-leasing and marketing in the community would occur in February of 27, she told the council. Construction completion is slated for April of 27, and initial leasing and move-in would also begin in April of 27. And they would like to have a ribbon cutting in May of 27. The initial plan is to build more than 60 affordable apartments for people aged 55 and older who can live independently. The existing vast school building will be rehabilitated and expanded for the project, which is being supported by tax credits from the Illinois Housing Development Authority. Later phases of the redevelopment intend to add some 40 units of one-story affordable housing target families. That phase will be sited closer to Garfield Park, and the city has a redevelopment agreement with the Decatur Park District to help pay for a portion of $1.2 million upgrade to the park that features a new playground, basketball courts, trails, and infrastructure work. How did the city end up owning a school building in the first place? The council had earlier voted to let the Decatur School Board transfer ownership of the Garfield property to the city. The city was taking a gamble that it could find someone to get a redevelopment project for the site off the ground. It was seen as an opportunity to do something to revitalize a key neighborhood which has suffered more than its fair share of urban blight. But the property gamble also had a fail-safe mechanism built into it. If the proposed redevelopment failed to get the tax credits it has now received, the city and the school district agreed to split the costs of demolishing the Garfield building between them. Councilman Pat McDaniel said seeing this housing project finally take off stands as a major win for the city of Decatur. This is going to be property tax put back on the rolls, which is a plus, he added. And another plus is the housing that we need for that age group who will be moving in once it's built. Decatur Park District Chief saves lives. Clay Gerhard, the executive director of the Decatur Park District, stepped into a new role recently, roadside hero. When Gerhard was out driving and saw a female driver pulled over with vehicle problems, he stopped to help, and then he saw with alarm the vehicle was catching fire. That is when he found out there were two little boys in the back seat, said Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf. Clay sprang into action and got both kids out of the car safely. Thankfully, Mom and the boys were okay, and thanks in large part to Clay's efforts. The Decatur City Council saluted Gerhard at Monday's council meeting with a round of applause after the mayor presented him with the Stephen Decatur Medallion. This is a special award honoring extraordinary achievement and noble acts. Gerhard said he was humbled by the award and grateful. I don't share my faith often, said the Millikan University graduate who took over the Park District's top job in September of 21, but I feel God puts us in the right place at the right time. The mother of the two boys, ages 6 and 8, couldn't agree more. Laura Lycan said she was traveling home around 2:15 p.m. on November 4th after picking her boys up from school. As she was entering US 51 from Lakeshore Drive, her vehicle lost all power. The car locked up, she said. Looking back at the situation, she feels lucky that she was able to get the vehicle safely stopped without crashing. Lycan said Gerhard stopped to provide assistance after noticing the disabled vehicle without any flashers activated. Lycan said she had gotten out to meet Gerhard when he alerted her to the smoke coming from the vehicle. Finding the back door of the vehicle locked, Lycan said she entered the driver's side door, which she had left open, removed the boys from the back seat, and handed them to Gerhard before the vehicle went up in flames. It all happened so fast, she said. So many little things made this terrible thing a positive. Councilman Ed Culp could see that Gerhard was shy about being the focus of the city's gratitude. I know it's kind of tough for you to get to the podium, to get recognition for something you felt was just natural, as a father and as a husband, to stop and help somebody. But we need to acknowledge you. We need to acknowledge these acts, Culp told the honoree. He said he hoped there are plenty of others out there who would do the right thing like Gerhard did, and added, but tonight is your night, and we appreciate you doing what you did. Now from our local and state news page, Council okays flat tax levy, from Tony Reed in Decatur. An early Christmas gift from the Decatur City Council is finally placed under every city property taxpayer's tree. You are going to owe the city less tax on your property tax bill for 2026. The gift arrived at Monday night's meeting when the council voted 7-0 to adopt an ordinance that will keep the New Year tax bill levy flat with the 2025 levy. That works out at lopping 10 cents off every $100 of assessed valuation for the city's roughly 15% share of your total property tax bill. The city's property tax levy will stand at 1.39607, precisely per $100 of assessed value. On a house worth $100,000, and assuming it is assessed without exemptions, that yields a bill of $465,036 for the city. The city's decision not to collect any more money than it did the year before meant it kissed goodbye to a more than $1 million bump in tax revenues that it would have received if it had harvested its share of increased property valuations. Instead, council members told their processional staff to arm themselves with calculators and scalpels and work out how to trim expenditures by some $1.3 million. Interim City Manager Melissa Hahn told the council, what you have before you tonight is a levy that is being held flat at approximately $16.7 million, which will reduce the tax rate. It isn't time to break out the champagne just yet, however. The Decatur School District slice of the property tax equals nearly half of it, 49.5%. The board is looking at imposing a tax levy of 6.77, which, for a home of $150,000, yields a tax bill of more than $2,000 and would be up $140 over last year. With Thanksgiving in the snow-covered rearview mirror, attention now turns to Christmas. Those looking to get in the spirit have a full slate of activities to choose from. Here's a sampling, in no particular order, from Scott Perry. Decatur Christmas Parade is at 4 p.m. Saturday, December 6th, following the traditional parade route through downtown Decatur. Lincoln Square Theater, Sidewalk Profits, Great Big Family Christmas at 7 p.m. Friday, December 12th. Scott Waddles and the Blue Suede Crew, 7 p.m. Saturday, December 13th. Decatur Civic Center, the Christmas tree lighting, 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, December 3rd. Includes the tree lighting at 6:15, free ice skating from 6:30 to 7:30, live reindeer, and hot chocolate. A Christmas with Brian White, 7:30 p.m., Friday, December 5th. And showing of the Polar Express at 1 and 6 p.m., Saturday, December 6th. Cost is $6. Pet photos with Santa, 4 to 6 p.m. on Sunday, December 7th. Humane Society of Decatur and Macon County, 3411 North Woodford Street. Downtown Decatur Christmas Walk, 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, December 3rd. Holiday shopping, music, festive decorations, and a free trolley ride. Decatur Community Dance presents The Nutcracker, 7 p.m. Friday, December 5th, 4 p.m. Saturday, December 6th, and 2 p.m. Sunday, December 7th at Schilling Auditorium, Richland Community College. Cranberry Christmas Craft and Vendor Fair, 5 to 8 p.m. Friday, December 5th, and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, December 6th at the Blue Mound Civic Center, 551 North Lewis Street, featuring crafts, baked goods, and candies, and more. Heavenly Holiday Christmas Bazaar, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, December 6th, Mount Calvary Lutheran Church, 2055 South Franklin Street Road, features a cookie walk with cookies sold by the pound in addition to other baked goods and vendors. Vespers, 2 and 7:30 p.m. Saturday, December 6th, and 2 p.m. Sunday, December 7th, Kirkland Fine Arts Center, Millikan University. Santa's House, December 3rd through 24th at the Central Park Transfer House, downtown Decatur. Hours, DecaturCVB.com. Rudolph's Village Market, 4 to 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, December 5th and 6th, at Forsyth Park. Includes a reindeer meet and greet, vendors, s'mores, story time with the Forsyth Public Library, craft and fun hour, the Polar Express movie, live music, and more. At the Decatur Public Library, guess who's coming to town? 4:30 to 6 p.m. Wednesday, December 3rd. Holiday craft, games, and more for kids. Santa and Mrs. Claus will visit from 5 to 6 p.m. Pre-parade party with Paw Prince Pups, 2:30 to 4 p.m. Saturday, December 6th. Holiday craft, games, and the pups from Paw Print Ministries. Ring in the new year with Ridiculous, 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, December 31st. The award-winning story acting duo, Ridiculous, bringing children's books to life. Now from our opinion page, Big Apple Bromance. After all that barking, what happened to bite? From Leonard Green. Green writes for the New York Daily News. Their barks were much worse than their bites. The steel cage match we were anticipating between President Donald Trump and New York City Mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani never materialized. Instead of a nuclear fallout, the much-ballyhooed meeting was more like a social media video of two dogs barking at each other from the opposite sides of a sliding glass door. As soon as the door opens, the dogs stop barking. I think you're going to have, hopefully, a really great mayor, Trump said, after the Oval Office meeting with the man he once threatened to have deported. The better he does, the happier I am. Okay, what's going on here, and what have you done with the real president? Trump couldn't have been more cordial if he were talking to the Pope. Did Mamdani find something in the Epstein files that the rest of us don't know about? Just days earlier, Trump was his usual name-calling self, hurling insults at New York City's newly elected mayor. Communist mayor of New York City, Zoran Kwame Mamdani, has asked for a meeting. We have agreed that this meeting will take place at the Oval Office on Friday, November 21st, Trump said in a social media post ahead of the sit-down. Mamdani, of course, isn't a communist, but a little unfriendly needling was never above Trump. Just ask Crooked Hillary, Pocahontas, or Sleepy Joe. Of course, we'll never know what was said before the cameras came on. If ever there was a fly-on-the-wall moment, it was before the reporters stepped in, when the Democratic Socialist mayor-elect of New York City met in the Oval Office with the Make America Great Again Republican President of the United States. There is nothing a Saturday Night Live writer likes more than when a name-calling commander-in-chief sits down with a populist political upstart. Like, what would Mamdani wear? Because the last time an Oval Officer visitor wore anything but a suit and a tie for a sit-down with the leader of the free world, he was mercilessly ridiculed by the host. But that never happened. Trump never even came close. He shook Mamdani's hand, he patted his arm, he even made a joke about being called a fascist. The love fest went both ways. What I really appreciate about the president is that the meeting that we had focused not on places of disagreement, which there are many, and also focused on the shared purpose that we have in serving New Yorkers, Mamdani said. Okay, enough already. In the days before the meeting, Mamdani said he was willing to work with anyone to improve the lives of New Yorkers. That's interesting because the last elected New York City mayor who said anything close to that was excoriated by his colleagues and accused of selling out the city. I communicated with the president yesterday to state that there are many issues here in the city that we want to work together with the administration to address, Mayor Eric Adams said in the weeks before Trump took office again. I look forward to coordinating with any and everyone to keep this city, this great city, safe. That, of course, was before Trump's Justice Department dropped corruption charges against the outgoing mayor, raising the specter that Adams had cut a deal to do Trump's bidding in exchange for a get-out-of-jail-free card. Mom Donnie has no such encumbrances, but let's not act like he's the first New York City mayor to realize that you have to go along to get along. So what say the critics now? Is Mom Donnie a traitor for not giving Trump the business? Should he rot in hell for consorting with the enemy? Or do we slide the door shut again and let them get back to their barking? From our food page, we have a budget dinner for two, including a spring salad dressed in a citrus vinaigrette, a one-pan pasta with meat sauce, and ramekin brownies for dessert from Gretchen McKay, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. One-pot spaghetti makes inexpensive weeknight cooking a cinch. Box pasta is an easy sell for so many reasons. For starters, you can find it just about everywhere. It's also really easy to prepare. Just boil. And even without a cookbook to guide you, pasta is incredibly versatile, lending itself to sauces and condiments, whatever happens to be stacked on a pantry shelf or needs to be used up in your refrigerator. But perhaps most important in these trying economic times, that humble package of spaghetti, linguine, or fettuccine is super inexpensive. That makes it a logical choice for budget-minded cooks who want to dish up something they know will satisfy friends or family while also saving a buck or two at the checkout counter. For lists of ingredients and complete instructions, see the in-print version of the Decatur Herald and Review food page. Now from nutritionist Barbara Intermill, A System at Work. I've been a nutrition nerd for a long time. In my college years, I'm sure I was a source of irritation with my many questions. One professor in particular got especially annoyed when I continued to drill him to understand not just the what of nutrients, but the how. I guess I'm still that way. And over the years, as we've learned more and more about how our bodies derive nutrients and other life-enhancing substances from the food we eat, the topic continues to fascinate me. As we go about life, most of us probably don't think much about what our bodies do every day with the food we eat. In fact, these bodies of ours depend on many well-designed parts in order to turn our food into the myriad of components that fuel and heal and sustain us. It starts as soon as we pop something in our mouth. Chewing is not just a nice pastime. It is necessary to break food into smaller pieces. Note, the more you chew, the easier your meal is to digest. And the saliva that causes our mouths to water over a tasty meal, this fluid contains special enzymes that begin to break down carbohydrates, sugars, and starches, the body's main source of energy. So digestion starts even before we swallow. How does food get from our mouth to our stomach? Each bite travels through a long tube called the esophagus. This organ has muscles, really, that contract to push food particles on the right direction. As food nears the stomach, it arrives at a security gate called the esophageal sphincter that opens just long enough for food to enter. Then it closes so the strong acid from the stomach can't go where it doesn't belong. Ever had heartburn after overeating greasy or spicy food? These types of meals can sometimes cause the esophageal sphincter to relax so that irritating acids escape into the esophagus. Once food reaches the stomach, this organ releases acid and enzymes that break proteins and fats into smaller molecules. This mixture then moves to the small intestine, where most vitamins and minerals enter the bloodstream. And it's here where enzymes from the pancreas break down carbohydrates, proteins, and fats even further. Interestingly, it's from the small intestine where most nutrients from our food are absorbed into our blood. And then there's the liver, what often is called the central processing unit of the body. Bile, a substance stored in the gallbladder and released into your small intestine when you've eaten fat, is made in the liver. And again, it's the small intestine where bile breaks up large globs of fat into smaller particles that are then shuttled to cells for energy. Why the physiology lecture? Many diseases of the body can be traced to malfunctions in these digestive disorders. Think about that next time you pop something into your mouth. Hints from Heloise. Reusing holiday cards as placemats. Dear Heloise, I have a hint for reusing Christmas cards. When my children were young, we would take the Christmas cards that we had received, and they would cut out circles using a wide-mouthed canning ring. Then we would put them on clear contact paper, and cut them to the size of a placemat, overlapping them so that there was no space showing. Then we put on another layer of contact paper. We could enjoy the beautiful cards every time we used them. We did the same thing with birthday cards. My daughter even did this with the cards that she and her husband received for their wedding. They now use them for their anniversary dinner. Lois P. in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Arrive alive. Dear Heloise, I wanted to write in about drivers' attitudes and distractions. I was driving on I-95 when a big pickup truck passed me. As soon as his rear bumper cleared my front bumper, he started pulling in, completely forgetting that he has a 20-foot flatbed trailer closely following him. I was suddenly driving at 70 miles per hour on the paved shoulder. Luckily, it was not on a narrow bridge. An avid reader via email. Avid reader, distracted drivers are dangerous drivers. Driving is an overlearned activity, and all too often I've seen drivers scrolling through messages on their cell phones, reading the newspaper, and turning around to talk to someone in the back seat. I know that a long drive can be exhausting at times, but if it's boring, stop somewhere for a cup of coffee. Or pull over and get out of the car. Walk around if there's enough room somewhere before starting to drive again. Dear Heloise, I recently took a road trip and I saw a UFO hovering over the New Mexico desert. I got out and took a photograph of it, but when I showed it to my sister and brother-in-law, they didn't think it was a UFO. In fact, they were more inclined to think that it was a cloud or maybe some experimental craft from a military base. Do you think there's life on other planets? Jerry in Nebraska. Jerry, I really don't know what kind of life is out there in the galaxy, but a great many people believe that we are not alone. I'm keeping an open mind on this one. Readers, what do you think? Dear Heloise, my brother was heavily involved with charity work for most of his life. He died last week and requested that people don't send flowers, but instead make a donation to any charity they felt was worthwhile. When my two sisters asked me which charity I sent a donation to, and it was a sizable donation, I told them it was an animal charity that feeds and rehomes animals. By the way they acted, you'd think the world was coming to an end. Now neither of them is speaking to me. Did I do the wrong thing? My brother loved animals, and so do I. Barbara Jo in Muncie, Indiana. Barbara Jo, no, you did not do the wrong thing. Your brother said to donate to a charity that was worthwhile. The charity of your choice reflected your brother's love of animals. This was a well-thought-out gift of kindness. From our National and World page, National Digest, High Court to weigh in on abortion speech case. The Supreme Court seemed likely Tuesday to side with a faith-based pregnancy center raising First Amendment concerns about an investigation into whether it misled people to discourage abortions. The facilities often known as crisis pregnancy centers have been on the rise in the U.S., especially since the Supreme Court overturned abortion as a nationwide right in 2022. Most Republican-controlled states have since started enforcing bans or restrictions on abortion. The conservative majority court has given abortion opponents some high-profile wins in recent years, but the free speech arguments at the center of Tuesday's case also drew support from groups like the American Civil Liberties Union. From New York, video shows how police arrested Mangione. Body camera video shown in court Tuesday documented how police approached, arrested, and searched Luigi Mangione at a Pennsylvania McDonald's, moments that underlie key questions about what evidence will and won't be allowed at this eventual state murder trial in the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. The footage taken 5 days after Thompson was gunned down on a New York City sidewalk captured the roughly 20 minutes between officers approaching Mangione at the restaurant and telling him he had the right to remain silent. During that time, they asked his name, whether he'd been in New York recently, and other questions. The Altoona, Pennsylvania officers believed as soon as they saw his face that he was the much-publicized suspect in Thompson's killing and quickly realized he'd given a fake name and phony New Jersey driver's license, Officer Joseph Detweiler testified. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, December 3rd. Please stay tuned.